I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, two more examples of how giving the government more money for something usually leads, if not always, leads to worse results. Plus, a congressional committee warning Governor Bob Ferguson that Washington State is vulnerable to fraud. And Vice President J.D. Vance warns young Americans about the dangers of blackpilling. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by going to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. The title of today's show, More Money, More Problems. That's what my tax guy said to me when I complained about the tax bill that he said I owed. He said, Brandi, more money, more problems. And I was like, you're right. Who's that rap from? I don't know. But they're totally correct. And in Washington state government, the same thing is true. We talk about this all the time. It's not just a one-off. This is a theme in government. The more money we give them to go towards something, the worse the results are. Let's go through a couple of the examples. Homelessness. The homeless industrial complex. We have spent billions of dollars, not just in Washington state, in places like Oregon, in places like California and New York City, trying to deal with a homeless crisis that for some reason just magically always gets worse. And it's because the way that they're spending that money isn't working. And it feeds upon itself. And the homeless industrial complex wants to keep going. They want that money to keep coming in, so they're not going to solve the problem. Another big example we talk about all the time, education. Our test scores in Washington state are worse than they have been since we've started tracking test scores. Yet we're spending more money per pupil, a lot more money per pupil, for worse results. It went from like $8,000 per pupil to $20,000 per pupil only to have failing test scores. So this is a theme in government. And I have two examples today that I hope will transcend politics. Now, I would argue that homelessness and education should transcend politics. This should be non-divisive to say we want good outcomes in education and we want fewer people suffering in filth and squalor on the streets. And so we want to make sure that when we give you money toward those ends, that you're using it to good effect. But for some reason, those two things have been quite political. I don't know why, but that's a problem for a different day. So here are two things that I hope are maybe closer to everyone's day-to-day life. The outdoors, as an example. In Washington state, it's one of the wonderful things that no matter your politics, we can all go out and enjoy. Put politics aside, get some fresh air, go hike, go fishing, whatever it is you like to do in the great outdoors. Except it was really frustrating, I think, for a lot of people when last year the cost of a Discover Pass jumped 50%. You'll remember that. It went from $30 to $45. And you know what? I think there was even probably some outdoor enthusiasts who said, that sucks, but I love our trail system. I love all the things that Washington State offers outdoor enthusiasts. So if I've got to pay $15 extra a year for something I use so frequently to help this wonderful state I love keep its beauty up, then so be it. But there was a dip in sales, you'll recall. So people, you know, as soon as the Discover Pass went up, they saw a dip in sales, which I don't know if that means that fewer people are actually going to enjoy the great outdoors or if people are going and just getting a ticket or risking it in the parking lots. We were supposed to have a Discover Pass. But again, I go back to, I think reasonable people could have disagreements about whether, you know, $15 extra a year was worth it if you could have, you know, beautifully maintained trails and all of these things. Well, here's the kicker. More money, more problems. The Department of Natural Resources is now warning that it is going to have to reduce trail maintenance. You guys, wake up, okay? Please wake up if you haven't hulking up already. DNR recreation sites may close due to state budget cuts. So not only will trails be in even worse of a state of disrepair, because I'm sure you're like me, where you go on some of them, you're like, for the love of God, don't we pay to have some upkeep here? Or I always complain about the toilets at the trailheads. I'm like, no one has been here to empty this thing in years. But now they're saying recreational sites in these summer months might close. It says agency identifies sites that could close or see service reductions without restored funding. They said they have recent budget cuts have amplified an ongoing lack of funding for maintenance and staff. It's going to hurt their ability to provide Washingtonians with safe, accessible, and meaningful recreation experiences across the state. This is all from the governor's proposed budget for the session that included cuts that threaten crucial maintenance work performed by DNR staff. And so they're now saying that because those cuts manifested, that they're going to have to move forward with some of these cuts to service, cuts to maintenance. And you might say, well, you know, they increased the cost of the Discover Pass, but ultimately, if the governor has to cut the budget in other places because we're in this dire situation, we're not in a dire situation. Our budget that Governor Inslee just signed into law is the biggest budget the state's ever had. And it's not even close. We're spending more money than we've ever spent before. So there's no reason, if we're spending and taking in more revenue as a state, spending more money than we've ever spent before, and on top of that, one of the key things that funds trail maintenance and all these sites that you and your family can go out and enjoy, if the cost of doing that has increased for Washingtonians by 50%, and they're still telling us it's not enough money. They still don't think it's enough money. Example number two, and again, this should transcend politics, transcend ideology, and keeping up with our theme, you've probably been seeing these headlines all over the place, that the cost of energy is going to continue and is already going up. Across the state of Washington, energy bills are on the rise, and people are getting very frustrated. Because, you know, you could also talk about what you're putting in your car going up exponentially. And if you're on the left, you're all mad about that right now, right? Because it's President Trump in Iran, and you have every right to be upset about gas prices going up for whatever reason it might be. I hope you were also upset when gas prices went up because of Jay Inslee's Climate Commitment Act. But for whatever reason, now you've got to spend all this money gassing up your car, and your energy rates at home are going up exponentially. I mean, I will tell you, for our studio space, it's like, what, 1,200 square feet in here? And it's a difficult place to heat and cool because it's got really lofted ceilings. My energy bill was $700 last month, way higher than it has ever been before. And that is a frustrating thing because it's cutting into your family's budget. So it's already high, and Puget Sound Energy has come out and said that they're going to get even worse over the next 3 years. So they put out their proposal for rate increases. So there's different proposals for electric or gas. So if you use electric through PSC for your home, your rates are going to go up 17% in 2027, 4% in 2028, and 9% in 2029, which is a pretty big jump over 3 years. And then for gas, your rates will go up 13%, then 3%, then 3%. So a little less in gas, but remember, they're trying to do away with gas and overturn the will of voters. And so then you can only imagine how much electricity will increase at that point. So, you know, you look at that and you think, okay, like if you're very Pollyannish still about all of this, well, energy rates are going up, but maybe it'll make it more reliable. Maybe it'll make it a system so that every time we have a storm, my power doesn't go out for 5 days. So, you know, if I have to pay a little more to have more reliable energy, that's great. Except that's not what this is about. They increased the size of government, and that means that your costs are going to go up. And not only is the energy that you're going to get less reliable, so it's more expensive because of government bureaucracy, it's also going to be less reliable. So it's going to get worse. More money, more problems. So one of the big reasons Puget Sound Energy is telling customers that it has to increase your rates so much is because under state law, PSE must meet a major milestone by 2030, providing 80% of electricity from renewable or non-emitting resources. This was a lofty goal put into effect by the former governor. They said that these clean energy targets, the cost of meeting these clean energy targets, just what they have to do in the next couple of years, is $3.6 billion. And if you actually look how they break down the capital investments to provide safe, reliable, and cleaner energy, so this is just capital investments from 2027 to 2029, 42% of it, the biggest chunk of it, is new resource acquisition, which that basically means stuff they need to build and get to meet these lofty clean energy goals. So these price increases are self-imposed by the government But I would argue self-imposed because the vast majority of voters voted the people into office who put into effect these unrealistic climate policies. All this comes down to something that you need to familiarize yourself with. You're not familiar with it already. It was put into effect under former Governor Jay Inslee, and it's the Clean Energy Transformation Act, called CETA for short. It was signed into law in 2019, and it commits Washington to an electricity supply free of greenhouse gas emissions by 2045. And then again, that 80% goal in 2030, so even sooner, 80% of electricity from renewable or non-emitting sources. So when you have a government that grows in size, almost every time it puts into place unnecessary and costly changes and roadblocks, because it's this big government, it's got to do something. And so it's creating work for itself. It's creating goals. It's creating jobs, government jobs. And ultimately, you're the ones who pay for that. And I'll go back to what I said is reasonable people could disagree if, and I think this would be true even for me, for any of these areas. If we had a plan that was really, really making a difference on homelessness, I'd be like, all right, that's a plan I'm willing to invest my hard-earned money in. If we had some of the best test scores in the nation, I'd be like, all right, I'm not going to complain about my taxes that go to fund our public school system. Same with the trails. I love some time outdoors. If it costs me $15 extra, I can afford that. If it means that some of these trails I love could be in better shape, and that those toilets at the trailheads wouldn't be so darn nasty. And I would say the same thing with energy, to a certain extent, for my home. If you would tell me that every time it gets a little bit windy or the snow falls, that I wouldn't have to be without power for 5 to 10 days, I'd be like, all right, maybe that's worth a little bit of money. But that's not what's happening here. In any of those cases, more money, more problems. Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center, who is our expert on all things energy, climate, etc. He joined us to talk about, and again, reiterate for the clean, green energy crowd, why all of this is happening. So we're telling people how their energy rates are likely to go up, but they're going to get much better service, reliability, and general electricity from that, right? Right?
Sadly, it's probably actually the opposite, which is that we are going to pay more and get less, because what we are paying more for is more unreliable but clean energy as required by state law. So yeah, pay more, get less, which seems to be sort of the motto for our state climate policy.
Talking about CETA really quick, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about former Governor Jay Inslee's climate goals. So this says that Washington has to have an electricity supply free of greenhouse gas emissions by 2045. And that is the reason that so many of these changes are happening. Is that a goal that is achievable?
Not really, for a variety of reasons, but the more important goal is actually in 2030. So in 2030, they have to be what's called net neutral. It's a little more flexible than the goal in 2045, but that's really what's driving all of these problems right now. So it is a confluence of two things. One, we are seeing demand go up, not because of data centers at this point, although that may come in the future, but just because demand is increasing. People have electric cars, we're electrifying lots of things, there's growth, there's all these sorts of things that are going on. So Puget Sound Energy, for instance, is short about 1,500 megawatts. They're going to be short 29,000 megawatts in the future. So it's the gap between what they've got and what they need is growing. The law then requires that to be met by renewable energy, which of course is more expensive and less reliable, so requires backup. As you know from the battery in your area that they're looking at building, that's the kind of thing that they need to do to take intermittent energy and make it predictable so that it can be used when people want it. So that adds cost, right? That battery doesn't generate any electricity, it just stores electricity. So you're paying twice for the same energy. And so the combination of those two things is what is causing these rate increases.
So is it fair to say that for communities, I mean, another thing that transcends politics, anger over the battery energy storage systems going into communities in Washington state, is it fair to say that the proliferation of those is going to be directly tied to CETA?
Yes, absolutely. They are required by CETA. And again, if you have a lot more renewable, a lot more wind, which blows primarily at night and the sun is during the day, what's interesting is that as the sun starts to go down, demand goes up in the evening. That the highest level of electricity demand is actually in the evening when the sun is going down and wind blows primarily, but not only, but primarily at night. So the gap between those two is when peak demand is. So solar and wind are, you know, perfectly misaligned with how people actually use electricity. So you have to get batteries. What we do right now is we use hydro because dams are incredibly flexible. You can turn them on and off. It's actually the most flexible form of energy. So we're very fortunate to have that, but their capacity is running out. We can't use that for everything. And then the other problem that happens is that as you use dams more to back up other sources, it becomes harder and more expensive to use existing forms of energy because they have to be more flexible and less reliable. So these problems all kind of compound upon each other.
Yeah, I guess I would end with this. You know, I went to one of these meetings about a BESS system that people are all angry about, and they handed out these cards to people who were also angry about it in the audience, and it kind of gave them directions for the city council meeting, you know. And one of the things that said, it advised people who were going up to speak not to sound anti-clean energy or anti-green energy, right? So I kind of laughed at that because I sort of understood what you're talking about here with it. It was the clean energy policies that are leading to this thing that they're all so fearful of. So what would you say to people who, you know, they believe that they believe in this idea of clean, green energy, but they're upset with what is resulting from it?
Well, they have to, you know, they have to face the consequences of their decisions, whether they like it or not. This is the real world. The reason that battery is being proposed there is because it's very close to the grid system. I think there's a substation there, so it makes it easy to connect. One of the biggest problems we have is that if we have more wind, we have to put power lines all over the place to get the wind from where we need it. The wind is in eastern Washington, Montana, Idaho, Wyoming, and the demand is in Seattle. And so there's going to be a lot more lines coming across the mountains. And my favorite example of that is a guy named Peter Goldman, who is essentially, you know, bankrolled the environmental community for many, many years, and then sued to stop power lines from going through the North Cascades, where he has a home, because he didn't want to look at them. So, you know, on the one hand, they want to put their hand over their heart and say, we support clean energy, but they don't want to pay the consequences of those beliefs.
Yeah, very well said. Good insight as always. Todd Myers, thank you so much.
Nice to chat with you.
Yeah. And again, let's put the actual topics aside. Let's just say it's not about, regardless of where you are, homelessness, education, you know, the outdoor recreation and energy rates. Hopefully we can all agree across political ideologies that government should work. And if you give the government more money to address an issue, that it should make the issue better. And that collectively, if it's not, we can demand that the government do better for us with our own funds. I don't see that as being controversial. I know it can be hard to hold the people who you vote for accountable for failures, because in a way, maybe you think it's a failure of yourself. That, oh, I voted for them, so that looks bad for me. It's okay. Let's just all demand that government works better for us together. I think that would be a good thing. So, gosh, wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that just be wonderful? All right, coming up next, we just got word that the Congressional Committee on Energy and Commerce has sent Governor Bob Ferguson a letter laying out the case for why our state is particularly susceptible to fraud. We'll go through what's in that letter and what they're asking of the state of Washington and specifically Governor Ferguson. First, given what's happening in Iran, straits open, straits closed, straits open, straits closed. What's going on right now? Speaking of criticizing people who you voted for, I might maybe have some thoughts for the president of the United States later on. But all of that can be a little concerning when it comes to your retirement portfolio. Really anything happening globally, nationally, anything happening in the economy, in the stock market. So reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Did I just call him Zach Abraham? Wow, same the man's name for like 3 years. Zach Abraham with Bulwark Capital, and he will basically just give you a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, and you might be doing great, and he'll tell you that. If not, he'll say, hey, here's some changes that we would make to really address risk. And there's always risk involved, but with Bulwark Capital, they're looking at the real fundamentals of value investing. They'll give you a full review, explain their process of how they're focused on risk management. They're always looking for opportunities to lower your risk, lower your cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. I trust my retirement with Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, and I would recommend at least getting a second opinion with him on your retirement portfolio at knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, some big news out of the Committee on Energy and Commerce. So they are sending letters to governors of certain states that they believe are particularly susceptible to fraud, specifically the kind of fraud that has been uncovered in Minnesota. And I call it the quality leering thing. I love that has awoken so many Americans to the reality of how deep some of this fraud goes and how in a lot of states, it feels so baked into the system. So here's the letter that was sent. It is dated March 3rd to Governor Bob Ferguson. It says, the swath of criminal schemes coming to light in Minnesota, including overbilling, falsifying records, identity theft, and phantom claims in Medicaid social service and health programs for the elderly and disabled, children with autism, people struggling with substance use disorders, and homelessness. The committee is concerned that your state's Medicaid program may be similarly vulnerable to fraud, waste, and abuse. And so this isn't just a letter notifying the governor like, hey, you know, some of what's happening in Minnesota might be happening there. No, it talks about specific examples, areas of concern, and then has some steps laid out for Washington state government to go through to try to improve oversight, regulation, and ultimately potentially prosecution of fraud, waste, and abuse. So it goes in here and it talks about a couple specific examples, flags for potential fraud, but also actual examples that have been prosecuted of fraud to sort of lay out their case and try to get the governor of our state to take them seriously and not look at it as a political thing just because it was a conservative in Minneapolis who knocked on the door of the Quality Leering Center. So it says in fiscal year 2024, Washington State Medicaid, which is Apple Health, spending totaled $21 billion. $13 billion of that was federal funding and covered over 1.8 million people. Medicaid spending in Washington State has quintupled. I don't know if I've ever had to even say that word before. Quintupled from $7.85 billion in the 2013-2015 state operating budget to $42 billion in the 2025-2027 state operating budget. So that exceeds population growth. That exceeds inflation. $7 billion, about $8 billion. To $42 billion in about 10 years. It says Washington State broadly defines Medicaid eligibility and administers several Medicaid programs that are considered high risk for waste, fraud, and abuse. In Washington State, these include clinical laboratory services, durable medical equipment, and behavioral health and substance abuse disorder treatment. Keep that in mind. Put a pin in that because I'm going to come back to that. But then it goes on to give some examples of Medicaid fraud that had some sort of Washington nexus. I'm not going to go through all of these, but they give an example. Last year, an urgent care clinic was allegedly overbilling Apple Health and Medicare for respiratory and urinary tract infection diagnosis to the tune of $2.8 million. There was also a recent case prosecuted by the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Eastern District of Washington that exposed a fraud scheme that was perpetrated by a sleep medicine physician. That was a pretty big one. In 2022, a psychiatric and mental health nurse practitioner and operator was charged with billing Apple Health more than $5 million in false claims that completely lacked documentation. So you get the point. They're giving concrete examples. There is an issue there. Let's see how deep that issue goes. But I mentioned what they pointed out, that Washington State has several Medicaid programs that are considered high risk for fraud, waste, and abuse, and they include clinical laboratory services. So remember yesterday, just yesterday, we talked on the show about the audit released by the state of Washington that looked specifically into how the state spends federal funds. And remember I said yesterday, hey, there was a number that stood out to me in some questioned costs. The biggest one was for the University of Washington's Research and Development Cluster. There was $73 million identified in the state audit by a Democrat state auditor that was likely improper payments. And I saw that number yesterday and we were kind of skipped over it because we were talking about childcare. But $73 million was the largest number for any single entity with likely improper payments. And that's in their research and development cluster. And now we're learning that in this letter to the governor, they said one of the places were particularly susceptible to fraud is in clinical laboratory services. So that's not a coincidence. Hopefully that's an area they're going to zero in on. Now, here's what they want Governor Ferguson to do, because I think that that's how do we be productive about all of this, right? Okay, let's say there's fraud. We got to do something about it. We want to stop it. Hopefully everyone wants to stop it, although I'm not so convinced that Democrats are quite on board yet because they feel like they're being targeted out for this. So they give Governor Ferguson a long list of to-dos, responses that they want back in the committee for how our state is trying to prevent fraud and manage all these programs. And I highlighted just a couple of them that I thought were really interesting. So they want the governor to describe the process for making criminal referrals for suspected Medicaid fraud to state, local, and federal law enforcement agencies. So how does that work? Who's doing it? Because one of the other issues in the state audit that it found is some cases where there was suspected fraud, if it was like under $1,000, they weren't even referring it anywhere. Then it says, what steps are being taken to sanction or disenroll fraudulent Medicaid providers? Please provide information about any sanctions or disenrollments of fraudulent providers, including all evidence supporting disenrollment proceedings. So they want to know that there's some teeth. They want to know that people who are committing fraud are being disenrolled so they can't commit fraud any further. Sounds very reasonable. One of the questions they ask the governor to answer, how frequently are on-site visits conducted by your state for Medicaid providers by federal screening risk category? And this reminds me a lot of what like Nick Shirley did in Minneapolis, what some independent journalists have done here, what independent journalists have done down in California. They're knocking on doors. Knock, knock, knock. Are you here doing what you say you're doing? Do you have children here, the child care provider? Are you actually a legitimate business? So they want to know from the state of Washington, how frequently are you doing on-site visits? Just let us know. They also want to know, does your state collect data on Medicaid programs with abnormal or statistically significant increases in provider enrollment or claims over time, including programs which greatly exceed their estimated cost upon enactment? Again, this is a similar hallmark. In fact, we played that CBS News report yesterday where they were saying there was this one doctor who was billing for like, what was it, 180 different clinics or something. And they say that's a hallmark of fraud. So they want to know, given the fact that that's a hallmark of fraud, is Washington State collecting data and tracking those things? So if they've got an example like that, they can be like, ooh, this person needs to be looked into a little bit further. And then finally, it says, please provide information regarding improper payments and recovery efforts in your state's Medicaid program. Yeah, I'd like to know that too. If someone overbilled, if there's suspicious payments, if there's fraud, are we getting the money back? Is the American taxpayer getting the money back, and how much effort is being put into that? I think that those are totally reasonable questions. It's a very detailed letter. I recommend reading it all. We got it on the Energy and Commerce site. And so I would like to see, obviously, the response that the governor sends. And I hope it's not, there's no fraud here, you're picking on us. I hope that they take, because look, for reasons I'm going to discuss in a minute, you know, if this is money we really need to run programs that are important to the state of Washington, the best way to keep that money coming into the state of Washington is to make sure that the money is being put where it's supposed to be put. So the governor of Washington should have every motivation in the world to make sure that they're rooting out fraud, waste, and abuse. So the chairman of the Committee on Energy and Commerce, Representative Congressman Brett Guthrie, a Republican from Kentucky, he said fraud shouldn't be a partisan issue. It's our most vulnerable Americans who are most at risk from fraudsters diverting precious resources intended for critical, needed care. I agree. Hopefully Governor Bob Ferguson agrees as well. Hopefully the state auditor, which I think she does. I think the state auditor has taken very seriously her role. And there's only so much you can do. Like the state auditor's office is not a law enforcement entity. You know, they're not the ones who are going to go out there and criminally prosecute people and bring them to justice. No, their job is to audit and to release the results of their audit. It's up to the Attorney General of the state of Washington, the U.S. Attorney's Office, to take what's in that audit and to go out there and do something about it. And so hopefully everybody can be working together to that end. Now, I just wanted to point out, since we're talking about them saying our state is particularly susceptible to Medicaid and Medicare fraud, Governor Bob Ferguson was just complaining about Medicaid funds yesterday.
We confronted some of the harm done by the Trump administration and the Republican Congress. We cannot talk about this budget without talking about that, because when they passed H.R. 1, the big bad betrayal bill earlier this year, Republicans in Congress made cuts to essential services like Medicaid in order to fund tax cuts for billionaires.
Yeah, okay. So Governor Ferguson's, as he always does, blaming things on Donald Trump. Like, oh my gosh, they passed their big, beautiful betrayal bill. Is that what he called it? The one big, beautiful bill. And they cut all these Medicaid services. Yeah, just last year, Governor Ferguson cut $1 billion in Medicaid spending in the state of Washington. He doesn't bring that up. He doesn't bring up his own cuts to Medicaid. And we pulled back up this Congressman Dan Newhouse press release he'd put back up last year, because when the big, beautiful bill passed, Governor Ferguson said something similar, like, oh my gosh, look what you're doing to Medicaid services in the state of Washington. Yet when he signed the biennial state budget last year, it included $780 million in cuts to Medicaid in the state over the next 2 years for the kind of programs and where that money is being used. So he's just being disingenuous. But also, I do think our state should lose funds if it's not spending them or monitoring them for fraud, waste, and abuse, et cetera. And we probably could cut $780 million in spending without a problem if you get rid of the fraud, waste, and abuse. I imagine that wouldn't be an issue. So fraud, hopefully we're all on board. Look at me, I'm kumbaya today. Can't we all just get along and fix the problems that government is dealing with? It's almost as if my show should be called Undivided. All right, coming up next, Antifa planning another round of what they say are non-peaceful actions against ICE. So coming to a city near you first. For small to mid-sized landlords in the state of Washington, the entity you want in your corner is the Rental Housing Association of Washington, one of our wonderful show sponsors. And there's a lot of different reasons to become a member of RHA. If you're interested or have any sort of involvement in housing policy at all, so builders, developers, landlords, etc., join RHA. They have events talking about housing policy all across the state of Washington all year long. So it's a good sort of, I would call it a social community in that regard. But they're also talking about how to fix some of the bad housing policy, not only all year long, but certainly when the legislative session is going on in Olympia. And then the most important thing, they can help you on a one-on-one basis. If you're a small to mid-sized landlord, you don't know what kind of forms, screening, all of these things for tenants, they can help make sure that you got everything, got the forms you need, and you're doing everything as you should be. So Washington's trusted resource empowering housing providers. Become a member today, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. With that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. All right, gear up. Is that this weekend? Yes. I need to plan something to do this weekend. Nowhere near any of this, because Saturday, April 11th, is National F Ice Day. Gosh, you guys are so cool. How cool are these guys? The coolest. So let's see, in Los Angeles, there's something planned. It says Chicago, Minneapolis, Portland, Washington, D.C. It says National F Ice Day. This is a nationwide event being held at all major ICE facilities across the country. Show up, ready, and show your support. And in case you think this is just going to be a nice little signs up moment, nope. The organizers say specifically, this will not be a peaceful protest. ICE will attack first. Nah, it's usually not how it happens. I've been to a few of them. Usually not how it happens. But there's already been action the last week or 2 weeks, renewed action against ICE facilities. For instance, our friend Jonathan Cho posted this video. This was the scene last night outside the federal building in downtown Seattle where they do some of these ICE immigration hearings. F-ICE, ICE rape kids. Okay. It's what they spray painted on the door there. So they blocked some of the exit ramps. That's what they did. You'll recall in June, they were out and they formed sort of a circle around the building. And they hoped that by blocking the ins and outs and the entrances and exits, that they could stop any of these immigration proceedings from taking place. Likely a preview, Cho says, and I agree, of what they plan to do on National F-ICE Day this weekend. So I imagine the federal building in Seattle will have some additional security outside. You know, one of the things they did last time that I couldn't believe they were allowed to, I mean, I will say when it happened in June outside the federal building, The feds were so hands-off for such a long time, they allowed them to get every, what do you call the, scooters, thank you, the green bikes and Lime bikes and the scooters, and stack them up outside all the garage ins and outs, because everybody who works at that building parks underneath it, and they were trying to like light them on fire. And I was like, you do know, don't those have like those lithium ion batteries? And I'm sorry, if those things go up, that is a serious situation. They allowed them just to continue to do it. And then chaos in Portland, per the usual. Katie Davis Court says over the weekend on Saturday, this was the scene outside the facility there. Hopping right on top of a car leaving. Real safe stuff. I would just gun it. I gotta be honest. I would just gun it. At this point, if you're a black bloc Antifa mobster and you surround my car or jump on my car, it's probably going to be your last day on earth. Because I'm not going to be, that's a scary situation. I mean, I've been mobbed before where you fear for your life. But I mean, they were out there and they were making arrests and stuff. So I, for one, hope that if things get violent or there's vandalism, that federal agents will be heavy-handed. Lawful, of course, but heavy-handed on the Antifa types who are going out there, admittedly, this weekend to not be peaceful. But you also see how they're messaging. Can you pull back up the Cho video for a second? Because the messaging on all of these things, it's all one issue to them. And they'll find anything. They had a sign up, it's somewhere in this video, that was talks about Iran. Yep, there it is. Iran. And so it's all the same for them. $200 billion for healthcare, no war in Iran. So whether it's ICE or it doesn't matter, they're just out there. They have literally no lives. Speaking of ICE, so there was an article in the Washington State Standard that I'm not necessarily wanting to fact check per se, but it just shows like the word choice matters. And it shows an opinion being pushed in an article that should just be about statistics and data. So the headline, latest ICE data shows surge in immigration arrests in Washington. It's got a scary picture of a guy in a mask glaring through a window. Let me at him. Okay. It says just a quarter of those arrested between October and early March had criminal records, according to new data. So it says federal immigration authorities arrested over 2,100 people in Washington between October and March. This marks an intensification in President Donald Trump's, that's quite a word, intensification in President Donald Trump's immigration crackdown in the state. The total arrests equate to about 13 a day. Is that a lot? Given how many illegals are here, I don't think 13 a day is very much. Across the entire state of Washington.
Seems like a lot for 8 hours. You know, that's more than 1 an hour.
Well, how do you know it's only 8 hours? I've been out with ICE. They make arrests 24 hours a day. It says they also account for more than half of the 3,800 immigrants arrested in Washington since Trump took office. As a comparison, during 14 months when Joe Biden was president, from mid-January 2023 to March 2024, ICE arrested about 2,200 in Washington, the data shows. So then it gets into sort of the arrests per month. And I just take issue with the word surge, I guess. Because there's not a lot of places you can go other than up from no immigration enforcement. So yeah, if you're going from no immigration enforcement or virtually none to actually taking our nation's immigration laws seriously, then yeah, I guess you can call it a surge. I guess you can call it an intensification. But it says arrest by month in Washington. October 2025, there was 484 arrests. November, 370. December, 523. All the way down to 226 in February. So it seems like it's calming down, not intensifying. Right. If you're going to write an article about it intensifying.
If you want to see it, say in December there was a surge because there was 200 more
than
the other month.
And now they've pulled back.
Right.
So you almost have half the number in February of 2026 that were arrested in December of 2025. Then it says the surge has been fueled in part by increasing arrests of immigrants without criminal records, despite Trump's stated focus on criminals. And this thing always gets twisted. Yeah. Look, and I've said from the beginning, of course, yes, let's focus on the worst of the worst. That doesn't mean don't arrest the people who are here illegally. They're still criminals in a sense. They came into the country illegally against our nation's laws. And if we did it on any other country to any other country on the planet, you don't think we'd be arrested? So this whole, he said he'd focus on the worst of the worst. Yeah.
He focus did. For the but first.
Doesn't mean he can't get get others too.
And I'll say it a million times until somebody listens, and then somebody on the left acknowledges that I'm correct. That when you have sanctuary policies, those policies inherently lead to more non-criminal illegals being arrested by immigration agents. Because you take it from the prisons and the jails, and you force those arrests to happen in homes and neighborhoods. And if you force them to go in with a team to your house or your neighborhood or your place of business, they're going to round everybody else up. So the best thing you can do if you really want them to focus on the worst of the worst criminals is to let ICE detain people in jails and prisons. But they're not doing that because why? They don't want those people arrested either. They don't want the murderers and the rapists and the child predators arrested either. They don't want any of them arrested and sent back to the country they came from. So this idea that it's a surge, I mean, I really don't think it is. And if we're going to talk about a surge, we probably could have talked about it late last year. And hopefully it'll continue to decline because they're getting all the people who they're trying to get. And the border's closed, so there aren't new ones coming in. So he's trying to reduce the population of illegals in the country. And I, for one, think it's great. All right, speaking of Trump, Mr. Donald, we'll talk about the latest in Iran, although it is changing by the minute. First, it's April, so you probably have a lot of things to do out in your backyard, front yard, whatever it is. I know Mike and I do. I really want to plant some flowers this year. I have the opposite of a green thumb. I've never really planted anything in the yard. I have a couple plants from our old studio that I have managed to keep alive in our house, despite Nicole dropping one of them on the floor once. Fine. But I do want to try to do a garden. So that means that we need to get some of the other stuff on our to-do list out of the way, like exterior cleaning. I just talked to my husband this morning. We need our friends at Valentine Roofing to come clean our windows because they're looking a little grimy, to be honest. I want that sunshine spilling in. But they have a really good promo in the month of April, where right now, if you bundle your new roof with new gutters, you get 10% off the entire project. That's pretty awesome. So if you're getting a new roof, I mean, you might as well get new gutters as well. And so you'll get 10% off your entire project when you bundle those with Valentine. And if you're interested, Valentine offers those gutter guards to help keep leaves and needles out for good, giving you an additional layer of defense against clogged and overflowing gutters. So reach out to our friends at Valentine Roofing, support the businesses that support us, get an estimate from them, 206 Roofing. Schedule your free estimate today. Make sure to tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided with me, Brandi Cruz. All right, in national news. So I think this is kind of in line with what we expected, I guess, to happen. And there was a lot of predictions that Trump would be coming up to this decision time at 8 p.m. yesterday, and there would be some sort of delay in it, saying, oh, we're close to an agreement. And I think that's a good thing. Although it's so funny to see the left react to Trump. They're like, oh my gosh, he's saying he's going to annihilate an entire civilization and he's going to nuke them and he needs to get out of office. And then they call him a taco when he doesn't do it. What does the taco mean again? Taco, Trump, chickens out. Google taco Trump. Trump always chickens out.
That's what it is.
So they're like, oh my God, he's so dangerous, he's going to nuke him. He doesn't do it. And they're like, chicken, wuss. It's like, oh my God, nothing will ever please you people. So here's his latest post this morning. He's calling out inaccurate reports about the agreement, or I guess the outline for the agreement between Iran. They're, in the next 2 weeks, there's supposed to be a ceasefire, which there's been a little pew-pew between Israel and them, which isn't great. And Iran can't be trusted. And I think that's one thing that we all need to understand as part of this. But they're supposed to be, for the next 2 weeks, working toward an agreement on what's going to happen with the Strait and the passage of oil, what's going to happen with their nuclear enrichment and all of this. And President Trump says that there's been some, and you've probably seen them on social media, these 10-point lists of what, you know, Iran says the U.S. has in principle agreed to. Trump is saying numerous agreements, lists, and letters are being sent out by people who have absolutely nothing to do with the USA-Iran negotiation. In many cases, they are total fraudsters, charlatans, and worse. They will be rapidly exposed after our federal investigation is complete. There is only one group of meaningful points that are acceptable to the United States, and we will be discussing them behind closed doors during these negotiations. These are the points that are the basis on which we agreed to a ceasefire. It is something that is reasonable and can easily be dispensed with. It's very much like fake news CNN last night headlining a source that had no power or credibility or authority to write a letter claiming great authority, Donald J. Trump. So one of the things that, and I heard a lot of consternation about this on conservative media, so there's kind of like 2 points, where there was a list going around that claimed that the United States would allow for continued enrichment in Iran, which is one of the whole concerns that we had in the first place. And President Trump has suggested that that's not true. The other thing that's going around is that Iran will be allowed to collect basically a fee for passage through the Strait of Hormuz. And I don't know if that's one of the true points or not. And they would use that money to rebuild all the stuff we destroyed during the attack. I'm not necessarily opposed to that. People were saying, if you allow that, then the oil that people use and other countries will be funding Iran and the regime. But if you think about it, and I'm not an expert in this area, but if you give a country like Iran a consistent financial source like that, they have such a motivation to keep it open. It's like that is a huge means of revenue for their government. So I think it would be much less likely that they'd use it as leverage by closing it. Don't you? It's just a thought I had to that potential point in that negotiation. But we'll see what happens here. I got to be honest, though. If they reach a deal that essentially returns things to how it was before we attacked them in the first place, and they're getting this money to rebuild by taxing oil moving through the strait, I will be curious, like, okay, what did we accomplish besides killing the Ayatollah? Because the people still don't get what they want. They still have enrichment. So there's a lot of TBDs in that. All right. I love this story so much, even though these people are unhinged. Remember we did this story about how in Idaho, the state legislature made it against the law to fly a flag that wasn't already approved, like the state flag or the American flag or prisoners of war. So in Boise, Idaho, the mayor was like crying and they sang this sad song as they lowered the pride flag, right? Because there's fees that stack up for cities and counties that violate this new law. So what did the city of Boise do? Expert level trolling. They wrapped the flagpoles in pride colors. And the trans pride colors, it's got the white, the yellow, the blue, the brown, the black. And then they did some wraps on some windows, which isn't violating the state law, although I would anticipate Republicans will go back and maybe amend that state law to include flagpoles. They'll just put it on something else.
Any property.
I have to say, though, yeah, government property. Mm-hmm. I have to say, it is a genius troll. Like, I'm not even really mad at it because I do think it's kind of funny. You disagree?
Fun. No, I agree with you. And they didn't do the sidewalks because the sidewalks have also had different laws.
Yeah, Federal Transportation Commission. Yeah.
So they're like, okay, we'll just do this. I mean, it's pretty funny, except for they, of course, spent money, taxpayer money, to do all of this.
Oh, of course. Yeah, it's just, it is a funny troll. And if the shoe were on the other foot and it was something that Republicans wanted that they weren't getting and they came up with a workaround like that, I would have a good hearty chuckle at it. So I'm not going to hate it. But speaking of Idaho, there was an article that really got me thinking, and it's a concept that I've brought up in the past about, you know, I really just believe the bluer states are going to get bluer and bluer and the red states are going to get redder and redder because we're in this divisive climate. And there's just some issues that people can't live with. And I don't blame them. Like in Washington state, for parents who flee over education and indoctrination, that's an issue worth pulling yanking your family out of an entire state. The tax situation here for businesses, that's an issue definitely worth fleeing to a more tax-friendly state. But I really feel like we're going to continue to turn into, more than we already are, the divided states of America, where there's just such political and ideological flight. And that's never good either, though, because if you get a state like Washington that gets even bluer, with all the bad policies we already have, and it's just destroying itself from the inside out, think of how much worse it's going to get the more that conservatives flee the state. And then I'll be frank, I don't like one party rule in any state. So for red states that are going to get redder and redder and no checks on power or ideas, that's a horrible idea. So I think it's going to be really detrimental to our country. But there was this article of this family in Idaho that says they're fleeing Idaho because of transgender laws there. So family with transgender daughter plans to close business, leave Idaho. So their daughter, who's a boy, So their son. The name is Eve Devitt. He was in New York City, I think goes to college, came home to Boise. I'm just going to use the pronouns they write in the Idaho Statesman as to not confuse everyone. But when I say her, I just mean he. It says, to show her friend the beauty of Idaho, she wanted to show her her state, Eve's father, Michael Devitt, told me in an interview. And she's like, I can't do that now. We could not make that trip again. She loves Idaho, but Idaho doesn't love her back. And of course, Idaho has passed all these laws regarding transgender bathrooms and things like that. And they say that's just the final straw. Michael, who has run Focus Physical Therapy for the last 28 years in Boise, will close the business by September for the purpose of preparing to move out of state. He said, obviously, the laws have been a disaster for families like ours. He wrote this in a letter to his patients. We can no longer take road trips across our beloved state or even enjoy a family night out at a restaurant or a movie without running the risk of Eve being charged and sent to prison merely for using the facilities. Angie and I have just kind of come to the conclusion that anybody with transgender family members in Idaho were basically in an abusive relationship with the state government. And it just has to come down to how many times do you have to get hit to realize there's going to be another one coming, you know? Look, here's my opinion on it. Fine. Do what's best for your family. I think it's very strange for parents who let their kids pretend to be a different gender, but it sounds like their son, who identifies as a woman now, is an adult. So I don't care what they're doing either. I don't care what they're doing. I'm not going to abide by the sort of fantasy, but I'm also not going to unduly interfere or criticize someone's private life. Do what you want to do. And if it really bothers you that you can't use a women's restroom, by all means, move to a state where you can do that. But I would say to the father who runs this physical therapy business, you better get ready, because if you move to a state that allows your daughter to use, your son to use the women's restroom, you're probably moving to a state that isn't very friendly to businesses, and it's going to get a lot more difficult to run your business. So that's going to be a trade-off. And is it a trade-off that you're willing to make? Maybe it is. But I have no issue with it, besides the point that I think it's going to be detrimental overall to our country to have this solidifying of red and blue states. And I don't think it'll be very long before this notion of a swing state is a thing of the past, where swing states are just not going to be a thing anymore. All right, we'll get to our subscriber poll comments and all that stuff coming up next. First, if you're thinking about, like, this family fleeing the state, you know what else I will say about that really quick? I guarantee the Idaho Statesman will have to, I'm not sure, because I haven't searched their archives. Do you think they've done any stories about families fleeing Washington State for Idaho for the opposite reason? Where it's like, how many families have you had leave here because of the radical gender ideology being pushed on their kids at school? And you think the Idaho Statesman is like, family flees Washington, and does this very flowery story about how they found refuge in Idaho. I guarantee they haven't. And if you can find a story that proves me wrong, then I shall apologize to the Idaho Statesman.
They did one on wealth migrating. Wealth, from
yes,
Washington,
but you can't
Idaho.
At all celebrate a family's decision to leave one state over radical transgender ideology. No, that's definitely not okay. All right, but if you're thinking about leaving the state or just moving to a different place in Washington, reach out to our friend Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com. Wes has just a stellar track record and so many wonderful five-star reviews, like this one from Evan. He said, this was a tough multifamily transaction with a buyer who was often unreasonable and difficult. Wes stayed professional, kept the deal together, pushed it to the finish line when it could have easily blown up. That takes experience and grit. I appreciate the effort and look forward to the next deal. Oh, I love that, you know, getting through. And Wes has a great personality and he's very personable. And so I think in home selling, that definitely helps. He's just a great guy. But they also, like I said, have a long track record through market ups and downs of achieving for their clients. If you go to sellwithwes.com, and then click on the Sold with Wes, recently sold link. You can peruse some of the listings they've been able to sell for clients, the outcomes, and some of the reviews that they've gotten from clients. Because I always say with a decision this big, reach out to a few real estate agents to see what they have to offer and you know, what past clients say about them. But I really think you'll settle on Wes and his team at Wes Jones & Associates. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, I asked you guys in our daily subscriber-only show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, and this is sort of a question about optics, really, because everybody's noticing the gas price increase. But I wanted to know if you've noticed an increase in your home energy rates. And I also asked you to provide me with a little additional information on what kind of like energy you get, because I mean, maybe you have your own solar panels, I don't know. And then who your provider is. So if it's PSE or maybe someone else. Nicole, have you noticed anything? I already said I have, because our bill here at the studio went up dramatically. I'm going to have to sell a kidney, but go ahead.
Well, I've noticed mostly because I've had so many people email me about them noticing, so it's mm-hmm. had me extra aware of mine. But yeah, they've about doubled. I'm actually on the website right now. They've about doubled over the
yeah, and that's a freaking lot.
Yeah,
I mean, especially when gas prices are so high, and this notion that they're going to increase them even more in the coming years. I mean, it's not sustainable. You got an increase of $100 a month for a family. That's $1,200 a year. That's insane. 83% of you said yes. There's been a noticeable increase in your energy rates.
Actually, I was just looking. One went from 30 to 60 to 90 in 3 months.
What?
30 to 60 to 90.
And I get some of that's the heat, right? So some of sure. it's, you know, and I think that's the same here for the studio is, you know, we've got the heat running all night long.
That was November, December, January.
Right. But even like mm-hmm. last year, I was complaining because our bill, remember, our bill was like $350 here last year.
Oh, and it went up another 30 in February. So it's literally been $30 a month for the last 4 months or for
what
4 months.
What on earth?
Yeah.
Harold says, for the love of God, yes. We use everything, electricity for hot water and mini splits, propane for cooking and some of our heating, plus a wood stove for supplemental heat. The PSE has more than tripled. So similar to what you're yep. dealing with. God, these people. Oh, but do you feel better about green energy? You feel better? What is green energy worth to you? Pickle Man, we have PSE. Fortunately, we installed solar panels a little over a year ago. Pretty costly, but it does pay for themselves. From April to October, I have only a hookup charge for the electric portion of my bill. Yeah, if you can get those on. I mean, I'll be honest. If Mike and I move to Eastern Washington, which is sort of the plan, we're going to, when we build, this is like 10 years down the road probably, definitely do solar panels over there.
Oh, yeah.
Because if we can do that, it's a no-brainer if you can afford them and if you live in a place that gets sun. Here in the Seattle area, Pickle Man, I'm not sure where you live. In the Seattle area, solar panels? I mean, come on. There's right? no way that's reliable. There's no
it's
way
funny
that's
too,
a
because
good
I
idea.
Wonder how electric cars are going to affect this, because most people that I know that have an electric car tell me it costs about $30 to $60 extra on their bill each month. That's how much it costs to charge a car.
Yeah.
And so I wonder if that goes up to the $200. You know, 250 yeah. range, then
is it even worth it?
Is it worth it anymore?
So.
I don't know.
Oh, Pam says, I about fell over. I just got mine today and it was $590. The highest it has ever been was $470 in the height of winter.
Ugh.
Yeah, that is super. I mean, that's tough. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. And do you ever donate to the Warm Home Fund?
No.
So
they should donate themselves.
Nicole,
I'm sorry. Not that I'm cruel, but I kind of hate it when government or, you know, mm-hmm. these programs. I mean, it's them like government has made our rates the way yeah. they are. And then here, by the way,
Nicole,
donate to the people that can't afford what we're
Nicole
charging
is
you.
Cold. I didn't even get that question out. Now, I think I used to, but then I started looking at it like Alaska Airlines when it says, yes. do you want to offset your carbon emissions?
Well, that, and then they get the write-off.
Yeah.
That's the trick, right? Because you do yeah. that, then they get the write-off. So no, right. if I'm going to donate to something, it'll be out like on my own directly to them. I'm not yeah. going through these people so they can write it off.
I also don't trust. I'd have to look more into that fund to see how much of the money actually goes to people right. versus like overhead costs or whatever it is.
Like the person at, you know, PSE or wherever yeah. that's like writing the checks.
Yeah.
Half of it goes to them.
It was funny. I shouldn't put this person on blast. I'm not going to say it because I don't want to get somebody in trouble. No, I think it would be too easy because somebody was talking about some other fund that's bogus. So forget I said it. All right. Some comments on you get what you pay for. Not you get the opposite of what you pay for. Mm-hmm. Baron of Gray Matter. If PSE told customers they will pay $20 a month more for 2 years and it goes away, but all the lines will be buried and no outages, would you pay? All the lines will be buried. Yes. $20 a month. Carry the two. I think I would pay, but I would be, if it was like a vote thing, I think I would be very leery about voting in favor of that because I'm not sure everybody could afford an extra $20 a month. And so mm-hmm. I don't know if I would want to put that cost on other people. But if they had a look, I wish government and public entities would do this more where they're like, hey, we need to fund this. Does anybody want to fund it voluntarily? Think about, I mean, look,
Trump's doing that.
Yes, exactly. Trump is exactly doing that. You know who he got credit from for doing that? Andrew Yang, who believes in like universal basic income, who's like far left. And he's a nice guy. He's been on the show a couple times. But an example of this, and I always use this, but some of the things we found that Washington State was using taxpayer money for, to teach immigrant kids hockey. I've said, make one plea to the Kraken, because it was only like $70,000 for this program for a couple years.
Right.
They would write that check in a second, but we don't even ask.
Or a hockey fan.
We just have any hockey fan. Like the laser hair removal for trans inmates. There's not some like gender justice league or some sort of entity that would fund that if it were going to go away. So with that, yeah, ask people. Here's how much money we need to will you see how much you can willingly get from people. We need to use that tactic that President Trump, and give them a lot of credit. Give him a shout out. Governor, have him to the governor's office for a press conference. But they won't do that. And it's such a genius strategy that the president does that he gets no credit for. Lockman, the crazy part is that our taxpayer dollars already go for parks. This is just a caveat that they want to take more from us. Yeah. The only funding they have isn't the Discover passes, but that's like an additional thing that the cost went up so much.
They could only tax Joy so much, and then they had to just take it away from us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. No joy for you.
No joy for you.
Subpower Zero. Didn't they want to have people come to Washington? How are they supposed to enjoy anything if those things aren't there or they're closed?
You can look.
Well, and I was just thinking yesterday, I was telling my sweet husband that one of the things I really want to do this summer is go camping, because I used to love going camping and I haven't been in years. And I was like, oh, I got to get started looking at some good campsites and reserving them for the summer months. Well, maybe not.
It's already, yeah, if you didn't reserve your camp spots in like October, I think they open up, and you don't get them.
So you're telling me that
you have to do standby.
I can't go camping? Okay, thanks, Nicole. Killing my dreams
off the grid,
today.
You can.
Killing my dreams.
You just can't have bougie camping.
Sergeant Pickles, we are already 60% hydro. This is an absolute lie to steal more money from us. On the investigation into Washington Medicare fraud, Greg says, hopefully the letter states the obvious. There is massive fraud because your state is run by leftist corrupt politicians. Kind of suggests that, you know, but Leland Taylor, the existence of the current Democratic Party is directly tied to the massive fraud in blue states. Eliminate fraud, so goes the Democrat Party. On Antifa planning an F-ICE day, I don't give a chuck says, here's my daily unbelievable sponsorship. I want it to go toward the recall of King Ferguson. I still want my boop, though. Boop. Papa Woody, Trans-Tifa Plus. Yeah, Trans-Tifa will be out in force. Lori says, Antifa has been declared a terrorist organization. Why aren't there any efforts to identify and remove these individuals? They hunted down people that participated in January 6th, even years later. Corruption. Let me rant about this for a second. Okay. June will be a year since that attack on me at the ICE facility south of Seattle. That attack in 15 years covering far-left agitators through the Occupy movement, through Black Lives Matter, through the Summer of Love and Chaz Chop in Seattle, that is the worst physical attack I've ever had to endure, considering they tried to blind me with wasp killer. It was also a prolonged attack that led to another attack on an innocent bystander, a United States military veteran who came to my aid and for his efforts got beaten to the ground by a mob of like seven people, one of whom was armed. So nearly a year later, and after I went to the police department and positively identified one of the suspects, nothing has happened. Nothing has happened. And I get it that there are more serious crimes. I understand that. I don't expect to be moved to the top of the list because I have a podcast. I don't at all. But this is a much larger problem, where they have been allowed to get away with that kind of conduct for years. And as a result, the conduct gets worse and worse and more violent because there's no consequences. So saying that, hey, we're going to, you know, we're not, we got other things to do besides these little cases, the impact of that is profound. And when they kill an ICE agent, when they kill a cop or whatever it is, I'm going to say it's because you didn't prosecute the many, many times, the many, many acts of violence and vandalism and aggression. And yeah, I'm sorry, the J6 argument that was brought up by this person, who said that? Lori Sandy. They hunted down people that participated in J6 years later. Yeah, the FBI was knocking on doors for years. Because what did they do? They did this thing where they anybody's cell phone in that area, and they went and tracked them down to figure out what they were doing there. And I'm sorry, you can't use some technology like that, now that you've labeled them terrorists, to come in and do the job that local police departments will not do. And I'm not criticizing the officers who handled my case in Tukwila. Were very nice. I don't know why it didn't lead anywhere when they had me come all the way down there to do a lineup. I don't know why it didn't go anywhere. And we should probably check on that and figure out, was it prosecutors, whatever it was. But like, then I'm starting to think, okay, what's the point? Because I went years when I was in TV and we didn't report, you know, we didn't file police reports and stuff like that when we should have. And I'm finally like, okay, no, I'm not going to tolerate this. I filed one in Portland when I got assaulted and my camera broke by this behemoth of an individual who we followed, Jonathan Cho followed to a safe house. 911, I was literally on hold when I called 911. Gave them all this information and they, within what, a couple months, closed the case and said, ah, we don't have any leads.
Yeah.
And it's like, that is so frustrating. And I just wish the federal government would or could, I don't know what the regulations are, but you've deemed them a terrorist group. They are terrorists. And so I would make a plea to the federal government to pick up where Tukwila police left off in my case, because that individual who got away with trying to blind me with wasp killer, the individuals who got away with beating a Good Samaritan veteran, those individuals are going to go on to hurt other people, probably one of your federal agents. So I would make a plea with you as we approach a year to see if you can pick up where the Tukwila Police Department left off. Is that self-serving? Maybe. One more. Did ICE arrest surge in Washington? Necro Tushus. I personally like to see ICE earning their pay.
Yeah, and I just think they've proven Trump did what he said he was going to do, because he said, I'm going to focus on the worst of the worst. Like, we're going to focus on the criminals and then we'll move on to the others, which is seemingly what they're doing.
Hey, this last little line in there, is that for public exposure? Am I supposed to say that publicly?
He posted it. So.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
One of our super fans, friends, Matt Gilbert, is in the hospital. Do we know what for?
A burst appendix. Ruptured appendix.
Oh,
what do they call it?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, poor guy. So.
Oh, no. Matt Gilbert.
Get well soon, Matthew.
Get well soon. Well, I didn't know if somebody just put in there as a note for me to know. I'm sorry. Oh, my gosh, Matt. Okay. Well, we'll check in on you, buddy. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity.
One more thing. Isn't it your mother's birthday?
Yes, it is. I didn't know if I should say that on the thing. I remembered. I called my mother this morning. It is my sweet mother Sandy's birthday. Big 6'9". Yes.
Just
last year in her
watching.
60s. Happy birthday, mother.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, sweet mom. All right. We'll get to our closing sanity check coming up next. First, we're talking about all these increased costs for you and your family, energy rates, gas prices. If you're looking for ways to save money, reach out to our friends at First Mark Insurance. Mike and I were just talking about First Mark this morning because he got a new truck recently and he was way overdue to get a new truck. And we were very scared about what our insurance rates would do on our vehicle insurance. And we got it back, our estimate. I'm like, wow, that's actually really good. It was cheaper than before. I'm like, I was shocked. Thanks to First Mark Insurance. They're out there and they're constantly looking. And they did that without, by the way. We didn't say anything to them. They shop around. They go out there proactive. I was like, holy smokes, that's not as bad as I thought at all. So take the First Mark Challenge like I did, like so many Undivided viewers and listeners have done, and see if they can't save you some money on your car insurance, home insurance, or whatever insurance it is that you need. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Join Robin, Carol, Debbie, Connie, Alex, who've all saved money on the First Mark Challenge, hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So, Vice President J.D. Vance was in Budapest yesterday. He was campaigning for the administration's closest ideological ally in Europe. I don't know where we copy-pasted that line from. I was like, Nicole didn't write that. I was like, what does that mean? So, credit to whatever news organization I stole that sentence from.
That was what they said about it.
Yes.
Him going there.
So, he's in Budapest, and he had a message to young people, and specifically for Americans, but I think across the world. And given everything that's happening right now, and I'm seeing a lot of this with conservative responses to what's happening in Iran, whether it's Megyn Kelly or Candace Owens or whoever it is, that it's like Trump does one thing you don't like, and it's like, that's it, I'm done with him. Here's J.D. Vance.
The piece of advice I'd give to you, and I give it to American students, American conservatives in particular, is resist the temptation to think that victory is immediate or that we're going to win back our civilization through instant gratification. I mean, this institution was founded in 1996. It's far more influential than it was back then. But I think a lot of people, this is particularly true in the United States of America, if they see something that the administration does they don't like, they say, oh, that's not what we voted for. We're going to check out of politics. No. That's the exact wrong response. If we do something you don't like, the response should be to get more involved, to make your voice heard, and to try to push things in the direction that you want them to be pushed. Our civilization was not built overnight. It's not going to be saved overnight. And so what I'd encourage you to do is stay involved, be patient, and don't let disappointment turn to checking out of the system entirely. There's way too much of that, I would say, in the Anglo system and the American system. There's way too much, you know, I didn't like this thing that the vice president said, or I didn't like this thing that the president did, and I'm going to completely check out. We call that blackpilling in the United States of America, and blackpilling is how you give power to the forces that are trying to destroy what our ancestors built.
100%. And unless you're planning to live as a hermit crab off the grid on some deserted island or whatever it is, you can't, unfortunately, get away from the impact that government in states like Washington is having on your life. And so disengaging does not mean you're not going to be negatively impacted. And you know, walking away from Trump or denouncing Trump, and I'm perfectly fine with anybody criticizing the actions of any politician for something they disagree with. There are no sacred cows. Just because I voted for Trump doesn't mean I can't criticize Trump, and you know, vice versa. I think I wish that people would, you know, on the Democrat side, criticize their own party a little bit more for some of the deep the cliffs that they jumped off of on the ideological front. So I'm not saying that, but there is a lot of like, oh, Trump on Iran, this is not what I voted for. Like, I'm done. What good does that do? And I thought that was such a timely message from the vice president. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback, for your refusal to be blackpilled. If you'd like to support our show, go to undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. I know times are tight right now, but if you've got five extra dollars a month to help support the work we're doing, we sure would appreciate it. We will see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.